This is it. This is a song we play every time C-Mac gets it done in net. Hey, Macalini.
Do we know if he likes this or not?
Oh, he's going to like it.
I'm going to ask him about it because I can say he doesn't.
He won't.
I would agree with you.
I played with him. He won't.
Loves it. Just like Anderson's going to love the nickname Scooby.
You're saying with authority that he will not.
Well, you wouldn't have seen the interview after the game, Gord, since you were probably walking out of the building, but... He's very straightforward.
Yeah, very businesslike.
Very, very dry.
Yeah.
Very direct.
This is why you need to loosen him up a little bit.
I would say, to be honest, in that situation, whatever works for him, I would continue doing that. Because he's had a very good career doing what he does. And I can honestly tell you that I would venture to say, having not asked him, but I would bet you a lot of money, that every training camp Curtis McElhinney has ever gone to, he has wondered if he's going to make the team.
It's a different kind of desperation and approach, right?
Because they're always looking for someone younger and cheaper to do what you do.
For sure.
More than most other positions, they're always trying to find someone younger and cheaper to back up in goal.
As long as I've known him, he's always just trusted in his own ability, and he knows, to Gord's point there, he knows through the course of camp, he's going to get his games, and he's going to have his chance to prove that he should be on an NHL team.
Yep.
And he's continued to prove that that's the case year in and year out. I agree. If I was coaching this team, I would play him again on Thursday. I know Babcock will not do that, but that's what I would do.
But this is something that's worth discussing. By the way, we welcome you on into Leafs Lunch. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Patrick O'Sullivan. Those are the voices you've been hearing. The Leafs coming off a 3-0 win against the Dallas Stars.
3-1, maybe?
3-1. Yeah, there we go. 3-1. I just really wanted it to be a shutout for Curtis. I'm just going to make things up now.
I think that's going a little far. I got to be saying, when you're actually going back and changing the score,
just changing the stats right now,
narrative, that's a bit of a problem.
3-1. However, even though we expected a high-scoring affair, it was still a high-shooting affair. Dallas outshooting the Leafs 40-34. So, you know, still a very highly entertaining game. The goalposts came up with some huge saves for both goalies in that one. I want to talk a little bit about Curtis McElhinney, and if there could be, or if you would, start him on Thursday. And here's the thing. By no means do I even want to go anywhere near a goalie controversy. Frederik Andersen is the guy. His contract, his money, and even the way he's played says he's the guy. But would you just simply start Curtis? Because this is also the first time, another thing that we've been discussing when it comes to Frederik Andersen, it's the first time he's dealing with this kind of workload. And if you can give him an extra day break, why wouldn't you? Not that you're saying you're not the guy. It's just another way to give him a rest.
No.
But no, just don't even bother?
No. Okay. I think Anderson's your guy. I mean, I remember Martin Jones, when he played in L.A., had a pretty good year backing up Jonathan Quick. I believe it was he won 5 consecutive starts and never started the next game. That's just the life of the backup. That's the way it's going to be. Robin Leonard went through this in Ottawa. Robin Leonard had a 7-game winning streak over 3 months. He was starting like once every 2 weeks. No, Frederik Andersen's your guy. He gets the start against St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't agree. I think you're right. I think that is what's going to happen. But I don't know when that came into effect as far as what you should do.
Well,
I think if you're number one guy, you're married to the idea that he has to play the certain amount of games, and you're trying to figure everything else out. If you're going by what you've seen in the last 5 or 6 from him and what you saw last night, and you're playing to get to 2 points. I played for a lot of coaches that would start him again. You give your number one 2 games off and then put him back in.
And for sure, I mean, we saw the Rangers do it with Henrik Lundqvist earlier this year. We've seen it with lots of teams. I think what you're seeing now, Patrick, is when you talk to coaches, they've got the calendar out and they've circled who's starting which games.
I don't know why it has to be so firm.
Because of that work-rest ratio, now it becomes a matter of the calendar. Okay, he's going to play here. The backup's going to start there. We're going to start him in the X number of games. You want Andersen to start between 60 and 65 games. How is that going to work out? And it's become much more of a deliberative process than it used to be. Now, in St. Louis, it went out the door because they weren't good enough. Jake Allen wasn't playing well enough. And Ken Hitchcock and now Mike Yeo are saying whoever's playing the best will be in the net. I think Dallas is going through that too. their goaltending is not good enough, they're saying whoever's playing well is going to start. And I just think in Frederik Andersen's case, you're playing with fire if you in any way introduce that seed of doubt.
Well, and this is where you have to also know your players and you have to know your goals. So this is where Mike Babcock needs to know the mindset of Freddie Andersen. If he were to approach Andersen and say, hey, this is a heavy workload. McElhinney's coming off 40 shots, you know, just let in one goal. We'll play him Thursday, but you're our guy moving after that. And if Freddie goes, yeah, okay, whatever, like, I'm good. Because, yeah, I felt like I've been struggling. I think I just need two more days, three more days, whatever.
Felt like it.
But I mean,
do we watch the games
exactly anymore?
Or do we just go by everything that is thought of 6 months before
exactly.
the season starts?
Struggling. So if you know that Freddie Anderson's the kind of guy who is open to that kind of stuff, then yes, you know, you can have that kind of conversation. But you're right. You also have to know the personalities. And if you know that having that kind of conversation with him can set off a downward spiral,
right.
then you have to maybe, and that's the thing. That's where Babcock needs to know his guys.
He's had to fight for every start he's had the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think he's far more mentally tough.
At no point would he think that he's not the guy, even if McElhinney had started two in a row. I don't get that.
I don't disagree. And
the only thing I'd say, though, Andy, to interrupt, is that Frederik Andersen didn't play poorly against the Islanders. He didn't. They played poorly. I mean, there were tap-ins, two-on-ones, I mean, three-on-ones in overtime. I mean, realistically, I don't think he played that badly against the Islanders. Boston, you could make the argument, but I don't think he played badly enough against the Islanders to lose a start. I really don't. I think that was a team failure against the Islanders, especially the third period. And he shouldn't have to wear that.
See, but do we look at it? I think this is maybe the point. Sully, just correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm speaking on behalf of both of us. I think the point we're trying to make is, why are we looking at it as in losing a start? Why aren't we looking at it as in just a few more days rest, because you're going to get quite the load down the stretch here?
Because this is a game that the starter would normally get. After a day off, the number one goaltender would normally get this start. If you put Curtis McElhinney in now, you are now saying that for this game, you're putting him ahead of Frederik Andersen. It's not back-to-back, right? It's not seven starts in a row.
Yeah, and for the team, that's if that was a choice that was made, that would be because the coach is saying, for the team tonight, this is the best thing we can do
tonight. Who do you think most nights gives the Leafs the best chance to win a game in goal?
Frederik Andersen,
right.
I would say.
Then you play him against – they play Thursday. If you don't think so, if you're at the point –
I watch what I've seen the last seven games, and then I say what I just saw from McElhinney, and I see a team who had desperation to play the right way in front of him.
Right.
And they played their best game in a while. I don't necessarily think that going to Andersen is like, I'm not arguing that idea and the mindset for that, but I think there's a strong point to be made for saying the best thing right now in this 3 day span here for our team is to give him another start, and then, I mean, look, there's no shortage of games coming in.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just think that you are now opening yourself up. I think you want to, whenever possible, NHL coaches don't try to put out fires; they try not to start them. More than anything, they try not to start fires. And Lindy Ruff in Dallas has no choice. They've had to pull their starting goaltender 11 times so far this season. That's how bad it's been. In St. Louis, they didn't take Jake Allen on the road with them at one point. They were imploding so badly. I mean, there are teams where the goaltending is so substandard that they've got to manage it game by game. They literally can't think a week in advance. They've just got to do whatever they can.
And here's the good thing. What were we even just discussing at the beginning of the season? Was how the Leafs didn't have this backup that would make them feel comfortable in the games that he would go in and play and pick up points. So the fact that we're even discussing Curtis McElhinney possibly getting a second start in a row, this is a good thing. This is why they brought him in as the backup, as he picks up his second win in four appearances.
Because Jonas Enroth had completely lost the confidence of the coaching staff. That was clear, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Whether or not it was his fault, whether or not he could get better, whatever you want to say, he had lost the faith of the coaching staff. And that's your ticket out of town. You cannot have that. And I don't know, and there's a lot of teams around the NHL that have this problem, where the coach looks at him and says, I don't trust you. He doesn't say it to his face, but just thinks to himself, I don't trust this guy.
Who do you think St. Louis starts?
Well, now all of a sudden you're, you know, I guess it's Jake Allen.
Even after the way Hutton just played?
I guess, but yeah.
It's tough.
Because Allen is now showing signs of coming around, right?
And Jake Allen played well against the Leafs last week, so maybe they think just put him in again.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I don't know. See, I tend to think with you, Patrick, St. Louis is in the situation. They're on the bubble to make the playoffs. Look, this is a team that's capped out. Their players are mostly in their prime. They're a now team. You can't mess around. And that's what Hitchcock said before he got fired. I'm starting whoever I think gives us a chance to win tonight. That's all I can think about.
Yeah. All right. Well, 3-1. That was the score line.
He missed the Sagan goal, apparently.
Apparently I did off that face-off that I'm trying to forget. 3-1 was the score
line. Face-offs don't matter, though, right?
Apparently not.
You know what? You are being passive-aggressive today, young man.
Patrick is being truthful.
Young Patrick is being passive-aggressive.
Don't worry. We will.
We are going to address.
We will address. But first, we have to get to grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the game.
It's time for Grades of the Game, brought to you by BorrowWell.com, Canada's leading online provider of personal loans and free credit scores. Who wants to go? You know, I'll go first. Season.
What?
We all know what I'm going to do.
Goalie.
I'm going to give an A to the goalie. It's going to go to McElhinney, Curtis McElhinney. You did what you were brought in to do. Went on in there. Wasn't exactly an easy night with 40 shots. We know the Dallas Stars, they're a high-scoring team, and he kept them to one goal. So Curtis McElhinney, to me, gets an A. There was also 3 minutes, like about 3 minutes left to go in the game, and there was that Patrick Sharp shot, just like point-blank shot, and he makes the save. And to me, we talk about so you score goals, but it's also the timing of the goals. And with that 3 minutes left in the game, imagine if that would have gone in, that would have made it 3-2. And you're talking about a totally different temperature in the building
now. His save on Sagan, too.
Yeah.
Sagan busting down the right side. That was a great save.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Sagan's got a lot of options there, and McElhinney stayed with. That was a terrific save.
So it was the timing, too, of those, right, where you just make sure the confidence still stays up for your team. And I'm going to give an A to Marner. I think, you know, Mitch Marner just night in and night out continues to impress. And, you know, I know we were showing some highlights yesterday where he loses his stick, doesn't give up on the play. Once again, making a play even when he's down on his knees and going down and keeping the play alive. And he sprung Bozak in for that breakaway. So just the awareness to, like, the no quit. I like that about him, right? There was always the talk of if he's too small. This guy is, like, up against the boards. He's winning puck battles. He's coming out. He's not giving up. So I love that. I love the grit of Mitch Marner when he shows that. So those are the two A's for me. Gord.
I only got one, so.
What happened?
You guys took the others.
You sent your grades in at, like, 7 a.m. Pretty sure I was still sleeping.
I'm sure you were. I'm going to give two A's as well, one to Nazem Kadri. And I think that what we saw from Nazem Kadri last night is what makes you really hopeful for the Leafs going forward. He was creative offensively, which you know he can do, but he was terrific on draws, and especially in the third period. So he won 4 of 7 faceoffs against Cody Eakin in the defensive zone, but 3 in a row with less than 5 minutes to go in the game. So really with the game hanging in the balance, and Dallas's number one center on the ice, Kadri didn't just beat him 3 times in a row. He beat him clean. The puck went hard to the corner every time, and the Leafs got it out. It was, I mean, and I know that, you know, people think we talk about faceoffs too much. I'm telling you right now that the coaching staff for Toronto will look at that video today and say that's how you protect the lead. You start by winning the draws. And the goals last night were all created off faceoff plays, right? The first two Toronto goals and the Dallas power play goal all came directly off faceoff wins. But Kadri shut down Cody Eakin to win those 3 straight draws last night. I thought he was really a terrific two-way player last night. Did you just do that?
Yeah, I forgot to hit the button.
Okay, because you know what? Because I did it yesterday, but up at Sport Check, we don't have a button there. So
yeah, well, sometimes I like to just mix it up.
I'll resume when you're finished clearing your throat. How's that? We good? Yeah.
Good. Okay, good.
Okay. My second A goes to Nikita Zaitsev. I thought he was terrific last night.
He was going to be my grade. You stole him. It's okay.
He was a leader last night.
He was. He looked every bit like a top-pairing defenseman for any team in the league. He really did. He was terrific defensively, scored a goal, obviously, played in the power play. But more important than that, you know, when Dallas was on the power play, Zaitsev was out there, and he just killed plays. whenever
he's killing players. Like, I loved it.
Whenever the puck got near him in the defensive zone, he killed the plays. And that's he looks to me like a guy. I saw him play at the World Championship, and you thought, yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, you don't know him big ice, because big ice hockey is much more defensive than the NHL game. And you wondered if that would translate. His game has grown a lot over the course of the last few months. He looks like a very, very good defenseman.
Well, that save that I talked about with McElhinney, Patrick Sharp, that was Zaitsev. And we've spoken about this before, Sully and I, on the show. Zaitsev has the wherewithal to know, like, take a guy out of the play and trust that your goalie's going to make the save or take the other guy. And that was the case even then. Like, he moved the Dallas Stars guy out of the way as opposed to screening his own goalie.
Yeah.
Because then there's the trust that, look, I'm going to move this guy out of the way so you have a clear shot of the shooter. So Zaitsev does that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no, I fully agree with you.
He's very smart. He will just do his job and not think about what's happening behind him. He knows that he's out there against the other team's top guys, and he trusts his other teammates enough to just do his job. And there's so many guys that won't do that.
He doesn't pinch. He rarely pinches. He keeps the play in front of him all the time, which is, you know, which sounds simple, but, you know, all Dallas has been saying to John Klingberg for the last month is, just keep the play in front of you. That's all we're asking you to do. Just keep the puck in front of you.
Jake Gardner, who I'm going to talk about now, they should show him some of Zaitsev and how he plays. And it would help him simplify a lot of things that Jake does that are unnecessary. I'm going to give him an A for the game he played last night. We're critical of him. And I think it's important to point out when he's also good, and he was last night, provided some offense. He was actually competing in his own end on loose pucks, net front battles. I mean, the way he played against the Islanders was, like, if you don't have the skill that he has, you're up top the next game. That's how bad that game was. So,
and that's a big bounce back night, right? Patrick, you know this. When you have a bad night, and everyone has them, it's important you don't have two in a row.
Absolutely, especially when you're relied upon as much as he is on this team.
Right.
It looked like, just as a whole, the six defensemen who dressed last night were committed to battling in front of their own net, helping their goalie, competing on pucks in the corners. And when you do that stuff, it helps the four other guys on the ice play their position better.
Yeah.
Because you can read, you can understand that, you know, this is going to happen, so I need to be in this place. And it just, it was a good game from Gardner.
I want to talk a little later in the show about offense from the defense. And, yeah, just how, you know, you look at some of the top teams in the league and just the kind of defensemen that they have as well contributing offensively. So that was Grades of the Game, brought to you by Borrowell.com. Do you know your financial grade? With digital innovator Borrowell.com, you can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowell.com. We have our man, Pierre LeBrun, who's going to be joining us here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, streaming online and on the TV, TSN 4. Welcome back in to Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, streaming online on TSN 4. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Patrick O'Sullivan. Joining us now are TSN Hockey Insider Pierre LeBrun. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Pierre?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Dallas Cowboys fan, but it was the Dallas Stars in action last night.
I did wear my Dallas Cowboys
lanyard
at the morning skate yesterday, and it was noticed by a few Stars players who nodded approvingingly. So you go.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Way
look
to go.
At you kissing up. Okay, I get it. I see what you're doing.
You cheer for Microsoft too? Coca-Cola?
No, are you kidding me? Have you looked at the last 20 years in Dallas
Come on.
Oh, my goodness.
You poor thing.
I know.
Yeah, have you checked the Eagles? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's your problem.
Yeah, heartache. Okay, so 3-1. A lot of people were expecting a far higher score line.
Yep.
And why not? A, given the way the Leafs have been playing the last few games, and also just the game against the Leafs and the Stars, you know, last week, and the Stars being a high-scoring team. What did you make of the defense, even from both teams? Because Dallas, who's PK, horrible, the Leafs couldn't get their power play going. in a couple occasions.
They finally got a 5-on-3 goal. Yeah. And don't get me going on that. I couldn't believe that call. That was
terrible.
Okay,
call.
So let's talk about that.
That decided the game, and you got to be 100% sure that hand's on the puck to end a game that way.
So let's explain. If people didn't see or don't know what we're talking about, there was the face-off between Bozak and Faxa, right? And then they deemed that Faxa went down.
With the Leafs on the power play.
With the Leafs already on the power play. They deemed that Faxa went down and passed the puck with his hand out of the face-off circle,
yeah,
right?
I didn't like that call at all.
And you're saying no.
It doesn't mean that the Leafs wouldn't have won the game anyway, but I just...
No, Pierre, I can't remember the last time that was called, and never mind in that situation.
Yeah.
That's like calling a foot fault in tennis, you know, in the fifth set. I mean, that's... Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But to your first question, Andy, I mean, and I think Gord was at the morning skates as well, but if you heard Mike Babcock and Lindy Ruff speak after the morning skates, you had a feeling that both teams were dialed in to protecting the puck going into that game last night. So you know, the problem with these two teams, and with the Leafs it's more understandable because they got eight rookies and they're just starting their learning curve here, but with the Stars it's been a problem on and off for a few years now. You know, they get dialed in for a couple of games and then they go back again, they revert. And that's something I think that, you know, this, and I talked to Jamie Benn about this Monday when I had a sit down with him, but I mean, point blank, he said, defense first is the only way you win championships, is what he said.
Yeah.
So it's fine to be the high-flying Dallas Stars, and I know that sells tickets, but I think moving forward, and I'm not totally counting them out, but I think that's going to be an incredible point of focus for them as an organization heading into next year.
Yeah, that's a personnel situation. You can have Ken Hitchcock behind the bench. If you don't have the guys that instinctually are able to play defense the right way, That's why you have the games where it just falls off the planet and you wonder why when they've been good for two or three straight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with that. And certainly they have a young blue line and the loss of Johnny Oduya for most of the year hurt. Mm-hmm. So you see the mistakes night in and night out. I mean, their top defense bear is still very young and makes a lot of mistakes. Having said that, last year when the Stars won the Central Division, I think they were top three or four puck possession team. And the point being, they sort of protected their weakness on the blue line by making smart decisions with the puck up front and protecting it. And they're not doing that as well this year. A lot of turnovers in a neutral zone. Guys blowing the zone early is what I'm seeing on some nights. And that's something you can control no matter who's playing defense for you.
But, Pierre, bottom line, the first goal can't go in. The first Toronto goal shouldn't go in. And probably the third goal. I don't know if you saw the note from the Elias Sports Bureau yesterday. It's interesting because 28 of the 30 NHL teams right now either hold down a playoff spot or are within 5 points of one. That was entering play last night. So Dallas is on that in that five-point range. But, Pierre, we both talked to Jim Nill, their GM, yesterday for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they say it, can they really go forward with this goaltending?
They can't. And I suspect that will be addressed, if not before March 1st, with an eye towards next year, then certainly in the offseason. I think Jim Nill knows that. He's not saying that to you and I, not saying it to anyone, because it doesn't do him any service, but I think they will address it. You know, both of those goalies have another year on their deals in Niemi and Lehtinen, but they got to make a move. And I'm told that there has at least been a very preliminary discussion between Pittsburgh and Dallas regarding Marc-Andre Fleury, but I stress preliminary because I don't think there's anything really there at this point, but certainly there's been contact. And sometimes you just do that so that if you have to circle back at the last moment, you know that you've at least established contact. We'll see. Certainly, Fleury with two more years on his deal and a championship resume, I think we all agree would be an upgrade. But either way, I mean, whoever it is, they can't go into next year. And it's not all on the two goalies, but the team save percentage speaks fairly loudly. They need saves. I mean, you can't be chasing all night long like they have been most nights.
There's a goal, you know, really in every Dallas game, there's one, at least one goal a night that shouldn't go in.
Yeah, no question. And it affects the rest. I mean, it affects the rest of your team, the way you play, the way you make decisions, and you're not looking over your shoulder, right?
Mm-hmm. Not to kind of belabor the point here when it comes to defense with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but, you know, last week on the quiz, we were discussing, offensive defenseman that could be a good fit for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, Bob McKenzie had mentioned Brandon Montour of the Anaheim Ducks, and he just you know, also said that it's more because of the surplus of defensemen that the Anaheim Ducks have, mm-hmm. and that they'd be looking for forwards. And of course, Montour ends up getting called up on an emergency basis and ends up scoring a goal right
good
after.
Little
yeah.
Good
so,
little
but of course, now it's coming out, and this is no surprise, really, right? Like if we've figured something out, that usually means we're the last to figure it out. The teams have already figured it out. So other teams know that the Anaheim Ducks have this surplus of defensemen, and
ooh,
now we're
yeah.
hearing, yeah, Colorado. We're hearing so Joe Sakic, Tampa, Steve Yzerman. Apparently, we're taking in. Some Ducks game. So are you hearing anything from the Leafs? Is this a matter of, you know, who can make the mm-hmm. deal first? Who is the most attractive deal? I mean, is anything kind of being done? Are we
well, certainly I know the Leafs, if they do something, it should be on the back end, and it will be something that you'll see the impact at training camp next year, not just for this mm-hmm. run. Playoffs? Yes,
yeah.
I'll say it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're going to keep their long-term view, and a young player like that would certainly fit. Now, as of last week, I hadn't heard of the Leafs really knocking on Anaheim's door too loudly yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you mentioned all the teams that I know will be calling Anaheim over the next 3 weeks here. The Ducks are loaded up yeah. and down on D. They can't protect them all come June, although that's something that Bob Murray can address in the offseason, doesn't have to address it now. The Ducks have their window open. They want to win. They want another top six forward. So you know what the price is, if not more. And it's Montour or Theodore that I think are potentially right. available, one or the other, but for a high price.
But you're not getting in. You're not getting into Fowler, Lindholm, you know, Vantanen, that group, right? You're talking more about Theodore.
I think it's more the kids, and certainly in terms of Fowler Gord, I think he's completely off the table. And I think the Ducks would like to sign him to an extension this summer, 1 year out. I mean, he's been their best defenseman yeah. this year. They just signed Lindholm. Vatanen's on a cap-friendly deal. I think it would make more sense for them to see if someone bites hard on one of the kids. But believe me, I don't think the idea from Anaheim is we are dealing one of these kids.
Yeah.
I think the question is, is someone going to blink? And there's no question to me, I think Tampa Bay would be keeping an eye on that, given their inherent short-term and long-term need on the blue line. You know, the Winnipeg Jets are a team to keep an eye on. If not with those kids, somewhere else. They need to augment their blue line moving forward, too. I mean, this is why it's good to be Bob Murray and the Anaheim Ducks. There are a few teams that can sit on a pile of depth at D, and you look at all the teams that are absolutely hurting there and are desperate yeah. to augment. So that's a good position to be in.
Just imagine if they had Dupre. I mean, the guy hasn't played. He's hurt. He's injured. That'd be yeah. another guy that you'd have on the list. That.
Well, I would say, Patrick, if they had a healthy Simon Dupre, they would have traded a defenseman by now because they wouldn't have been cap compliant.
Well, that's what I mean.
They had problems
entering
the year after signing Lindholm where they were really, I mean, as yeah. it is, their guys going up and down to San Diego. By the way, what a great place to play minor league hockey.
Yeah, no kidding.
But if Dupre was a healthy player this year, something probably would have been a move back in September, October, because the Ducks wouldn't have been under the cap.
I know this is hard to predict because sometimes we get shocked when we see a trade and we're like, that guy got that much for, you know, that player. But mm-hmm. when you're saying that the price could be high for, you know, a Theodore or a Montour, I think Montour now has played like maybe, what, six? Like a handful of NHL games.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Theodore who, you know, the other year played 19, you know, this year 27. I mean, what realistically could be the asking price? And if we kind of narrow it down, because this is Leafs mm-hmm. lunch, if we were to look at the Leafs, what realistically could the Leafs offer up Anaheim? Like, what is the asking
you're
price?
You're trying to produce a clip from me that you're going to tweet out for the next 24
hours. She wants to get you radioed, Pierre.
She wants me to get radioed.
I am speaking on behalf yeah. of Leafs fans, because if you say the yeah. price is high, so I start to think, high price and what would be, you know, available?
Listen, as Gordon knows, the price varies from organization to organization because, you know, the Ducks would view the assets differently from team to team.
Exactly, yeah.
But certainly when it comes to the Leafs, they're deep up front. You know, is JVR plus going to get them Brandon Montour? I don't think so, but I could be wrong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think we know the name that is going to get them the most, yes.
but
I don't know if they want to move him. It might be too early in the process for Toronto to make that call. Maybe they wait till the offseason. I don't know.
But, BR, here's the thing. You know, and people rip on Edmonton for trading Taylor Hall for Adam Larson.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is the Oilers had a surplus of forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And needed a defenseman. Now, maybe evaluating straight up, you know, one for one, is Taylor Hall better than Adam Larson? Yeah, probably. But the Oilers needed a defenseman. They didn't want PK Subban, and so the price you pay is Taylor Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced they would make that deal again.
Well,
I'm sure they would because Larson's something they need, And Hall was something they already had.
They have zero buyer's remorse on that deal, Gord, yeah. To your point. And Larson's been a steady presence, which they needed. And the key part of that deal that gets glossed over all the time is the controllable nature of that cap-friendly deal that Larson has.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That was huge. Like, you know, if Brandon Montour is traded, and again, he may not be, but if he is, he may end up fetching more than Kevin Shattenkirk at
right.
the deadline. And people are going to say, what? Well, because Kevin Shattenkirk is UFA July 1st. He's a rental. Mm-hmm. You're borrowing a guy for 3 months, whereas you're getting a controllable asset for years to come in Brandon Montour, who is cheap right now, too.
Now, if Shattenkirk signs for a trade, that's different.
No question. I mean, I've seen no evidence that is even in the cards right now, Gord. That can change 3 weeks ago. But as of now, my understanding is all the calls that the Blues are getting are rental-oriented. And I think that's because some of the teams that are interested are worried about the flat cap again and tying their hands with a big contract. So Kevin Shattenkirk's going to get paid big time at some point here, probably July 1st. But I think teams want to get an exact figure on the cap before they make that kind of plunge.
But you're going to pay a premium for defensemen. You are going to pay an AA premium on defensemen.
Okay, let's not talk about Montour anymore. I don't want anyone else to know about him.
Andy, there are people who do this for a living who have heard of him.
Shh, you do not know about him. Nobody knows about him. Before we let you go, as we continue to chat with our TSN hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun, NHL asking players to rate the ice now at games, what it's like after 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes. What are they going to do with this information?
Well, it's funny. I mean, Dan Craig was asked to speak to this issue at the Board of Governors meeting All-Star Weekend, and which wasn't originally the plan, i.e., someone felt the need to involve Dan Craig in that meeting, which tells you something. And I think part of Dan Craig's message, the NHL ice guru, is that, you know, arenas around the league need to pay more attention to what he's saying, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he leaves a rink after everything seems fine, and then 3 weeks later there's something going down. And so I think the message back to governors was, get back to your guys and make sure that we're all following protocol. I think there's been sort of a loosening of that protocol from rink to rink this year, which is why you've seen a bunch of different things.
But you know what, Pierre? Officials have been raiding the ice for years.
So have players.
The officials have been filling out sheets for the last decade as well about the ice. I got to be honest. It makes me laugh to hear players complain about the ice.
I don't see players complaining, though.
I've heard a few. But, I mean, honestly, and we've been around long enough to see the old buildings, it's so much better than it was. Oh my God! The ice at the Maple Leaf Gardens was a great old building. The ice was garbage there most nights.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
The ice was terrible at the gardens, but there's no basement.
Memory's a funny thing. You tend to remember a certain version of what you want.
Right.
You know, obviously in Edmonton, there used to be the greatest ice ever in the 80s. But
the building was used 41 times a year. Mm-hmm. There was never anything else in it.
Well, a bit more, I'd say, in those days.
Well, but no, during the regular season.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, there were no concerts. Not a lot of concerts in there during the hockey season.
Yeah.
It's a dry climate. It's cold. I mean, it's made for good ice. But you know what? The ice in the new building in Edmonton isn't that great in a building that gets used a lot more.
But yeah. That's why I just wondered what they would do with the information, because we all know, and this was some of the, you know, the biggest criticism coming out of, you know, Madison Square Gardens, is we know that they have the basketball and they have so many concerts and they have all the events, and then the circus would come in, and, you know, that's gone now. But it was always like all these other events, it would affect the ice. But this is my point. Do you honestly think these buildings are not going to continue renting out to concerts and to other shows?
No, but there are little details that I think if everyone stays on top, you know, the type of things that Dan Craig wants to do with keeping the rink as cold as possible, the ventilation system, where banners are placed, or all kinds of little details that would bore the heck out of you.
And dehumidifying systems, which are expensive to run.
Totally. And
I'll
leave you with this, one of my great pet peeves that I know all of you, I'm sure, share. How about no hockey past May 31st? Can we make that happen one day?
No one complains about the ice if you're playing in the Stanley Cup Final.
Well, I've kind of been saying...
You need to educate the people that do that work, too. Like, you know, you can have the best guy in the world giving directions out and ideas and protocol. If you don't have people that can understand it and then follow through, it's like you might as well talk to the wall.
Do you know how much it costs, though? Like, in places like Carolina, when they made those deep runs in the playoffs... How much it costs to keep the building operating in late May and early June?
Mm-hmm.
To keep an ice surface?
It's okay. They just raised the ticket prices for playoffs.
It won't cover it. I mean, honestly, it's running into like $75,000 a day.
Jeez. Oh, Pierre, always appreciate your insight, my friend.
Yeah. That's like renting out Gordon Miller for a day.
Ugh.
Easy slugger. Easy
Who's
slugger.
Who's going to pay that?
Go back and watch your Super Bowl 12 videos or whatever it is that you're doing tonight.
Black and white. I love it.
And stop talking about Montour.
Okay.
All right. That is Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. We got more coming up here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, stream online, and on TSN 4.
So easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace. Lease busters, avoid penalties, avoid terrible analytics, and early termination. Go to leasebusters.com.
Wait, I don't know if I have that read. Hold on a second.
Pass me that script for a second. Hold on. There is nowhere in this script does the word analytics appear.
Somebody's ad-libbing. On the fly.
You know what? I think we need to address this because...
Send me the bill, Leafbusters.
Young Patrick. We love young Patrick. I've known him for a long time. Called his gold medal winning goal in the 2004 World Junior Championship. Scored twice in the third period. He was a fine young man then. He's a fine young man now.
Young cannibals.
But there is a problem, young Patrick. You cannot leave a Patrick O'Sullivan-sized hole in the wall every time someone on Twitter... replies to something you said or criticizes.
I see. I'd agree, unless it's a guy that works for the same company as us.
Okay, so
let's not open up this can of worms because let's make it about me. I have a story to share. I'm totally kidding.
That said, Patrick, I would say,
are you going to have the same conversation you had with me before the show?
Oh my god,
started?
I felt like we were being lectured by our dad.
No, not being lectured. I'm just trying to offer you the benefit of 34 years in broadcasting. There was once a columnist at the Globe and Mail who was very hard on me, and I felt quite unfairly, and he's no longer there. And
what'd you do to him?
He
just retired.
Yeah,
he's now he's a blogger.
No, he tried a blog and it failed. So anyway, the then president of TSN, the late Jim Thompson, said, "Why do you care what that guy says about you? You're on a platform that's 100 times bigger than his. Why are you spending 1 second worrying what he has to say about you?" So I would pass along.
I agree with that.
I would pass along that same advice to you, Patrick. You obviously have an insight into the game that most of us don't because you played it. You have an understanding of the game. You can appreciate that there are some good analytics and some benefits to analytics.
Which
you have stated repeatedly. However, getting into Twitter battles with people who live to be in Twitter battles is only feeding what they want.
Dad, can we go out and play now?
You can go out and play.
Thank you.
But make sure you eat your vegetables.
And you're welcome for the entertainment.
Yeah. Yes. It's highly entertaining following Sully on Twitter. By the way, shout out to Austin Matthews.
That, Gord? I do. Yeah. Listen, do what you want. I mean, I wake up every morning to see Ray Ferraro.
Oh my God, Bray's the best when he gets into some of his.
So chum,
the thing you need to
pal, and buddy, right? So when Ray Ferraro calls you chum, pal, or buddy, he does not want to be your friend. That does not mean he wants to be your friend. And by the way, if you are going to attack Ray Ferraro on Twitter, I don't recommend it because his mentions are open, right? He reads his mentions. Yeah. Mine are blocked, so I can't see what people say back. But his are open, so he reads them. If you are going to attack Ray Ferraro on Twitter, I would suggest that your Twitter photo not show you wearing a stupid hat, eating, like stuffing your face full of hot dogs, or wearing ugly clothing. Or wearing clothing that's inappropriate for your physical condition.
Because he will
mercilessly mock you. But the best was Bob McKenzie. He is the king. So what he would do is someone would say something really unfair to him, and he would retweet it. Now, most people have, like 50 Twitter followers. I always say if you've got 1,500 tweets and under 100 Twitter followers, you're just texting your friends is all you're doing. But anyway, what Bob would do is he would post your tweet. And most people have their Twitter connected to their email. Well, Bob's got over 1 million followers. 50,000 people would come back. Your email box would suddenly explode.
Oh,
you're sitting at work and suddenly your email explodes because you went after Bob.
Sometimes, you just live a life and you don't care about them. But Sully is entertaining. Last night was entertaining.
That's the only reason I do it, Gord. I don't really care what anybody thinks.
Okay.
Like I should probably care more.
No,
like, I'm on the other side of the thing.
Okay.
So I'm talking about, even people that maybe have, my best interest. Like
you don't care
I'm not
what I
super.
Think. That's fair enough.
Well, it would depend. But anyways, it's entertainment for me. I don't really care. If you're a loser and you're on Twitter and you say something stupid, I'm going to make it public and I'm going to give my thoughts on it.
So there. As I was saying, that's our Twitter chat for today.
Okay.
Austin Matthews picks up goal number 25, becoming the first Leafs rookie to score 25 in a season since Sergei Bereson in 96-97.
And Bereson was...
Congrats, Austin.
And Bereson was a 25-year-old rookie, I think, 24 or 25.
Yeah, he was 25, I think.
Austin is 12. That is highly impressive.
I don't know that... I mean, I think... I saw Austin Matthews play in the World Junior, saw him play the World Championship. Mike Babcock said to me last year at the World Championship in St. Petersburg, we just watched a Team USA game, and there was a question about, you know, Lion A versus Matthews, and there was still a conversation. And Babcock turned to me and said, get used to saying his name. Just get used to saying he's our guy. And I think even they didn't expect this soon. He is so good. I mean, we're talking here about a guy who I really think in 2 or 3 years is going to be, and you don't want to put this on him too quickly, but he's going to be in the conversation as being one of the 5 best players in the league. Ooh, you're going to be talking McDavid, Crosby.
No, that's fair.
He's going to be in that conversation. That's how good he is. He's next to that number one defense position. Finding a number one center is so hard to do. He's it.
And here's what never will happen. And this is the difference between him and Lion A and even Marner and Nylander and anybody else that you'd like to compare him to. At no point in his career will he ever have a game like Patrick Laine had last night. It simply will not happen, where you're so bad that you sit on the bench for the third period.
Right.
He is far too good, far too consistent, far too effective to ever have a game where the coach says, I just can't put you on the ice.
When you played Patrick, who was the player that they put guys with if they were struggling, that they knew would come out of it? Who were guys?
Well, it would depend. I mean...
Did you play with Kopitar in L.A.?
I did. I played with him for a little bit. I played... Well, I don't want to talk about who I played with in Edmonton.
Right.
We don't want to get into that, but...
But you know, in Chicago, if you're struggling, they put you with Taves and Hossa. Whoever played with them...
I would love to struggle in Chicago.
With their, okay, you know, in his prime... You know,
Sean Horkoff, J.F. Jacques, do anything for you?
Good guys. But you know, in Pittsburgh, whoever plays with Crosby is going to be a better player. Austin Matthews doesn't need... to have good players to make him better. Whoever plays with him is going to be a better player.
Yes.
And that is so hard to find.
Look who he plays with. And look at what he's done. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It magnifies how good he is because of who he has to play.
And he's just scratching the surface. He's going to get measurably better.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes to the league, you know, 1 year, 2 years, he's going to figure out little tricks. He's going to figure out things he can do that are going to work all the time.
Yep.
He's got an unbelievable temperament, like an incredibly even tempered. Like he's when I first met him, I said he's either completely oblivious to everything going on around him, or he's the most self-possessed 16-year-old I've ever seen. And I think it is. He's just got a great view of things. He's got a great perspective. He's a player.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about the offense from defense. And I know when it comes to the Leafs, we keep talking about perhaps maybe a guy who can just stay at home and, you know, play a little bit more defense. However,
no.
Last night, Gardner Zaitsev scored. It's the first time since November 11th. That was the only time this season that the Leafs got 2 goals by the blue line. And that was a 6-3 win over the Flyers. When you look at the top D-men in the league, points-wise, 7 of the top 10 scoring D-men are on teams currently in playoff position. The 3 D-men who are in the top 10 who are on teams that are not, it's Tampa, that's Hedman, Bufflin from Winnipeg, and Torrey Krug in Boston. But it just, and I know we always say, well, do you want a defenseman scoring or playing defense? Well, how about this? This is kind of like the story with Nazem Kadri. Work on your defensive game and the goals kind of come. It seems like when your defense is also scoring and you're getting that contribution, it speaks to their confidence and the fact that they're keeping it out of their own end. That's what's leading them to be part of the rush and getting goals.
Well, and it's being able to move the puck, too. It's not just points. It's being able to move the puck. The greatness of Scott Niedermeyer and Nick Lidstrom was they single-handedly negated forechecks. You could not forecheck the Red Wings when Lidstrom was on the ice. You could not forecheck New Jersey or Anaheim when Niedermeyer was on the ice because they moved the puck so well, so quickly, so accurately. You never get them on their heels. because they just get it and move it. And mm-hmm. and the other thing is, you go in the corner with them, and suddenly they've got the puck, and it's gone. And you're looking around saying, how did he get it? Where did it go? And yeah. And those players, like Patrick, when you were playing defensive defensemen, everyone talked about we got to get defensive defensemen. They are quickly becoming endangered species in the NHL. If you can't make a play, Steve Yzerman showed the way with the Olympic team in 2010 in Vancouver. He took no defensive defensemen. Every guy he took was a puck mover.
Yeah, well, you have to be able to skate and pass, at the very least. Right. You don't need to be necessarily skilled. Jay Bouwmeester is not skilled, but he can pass, and yeah. he can skate, and he can see, and he's smart.
Right.
That's why he's on Team Canada every time.
And Chris Pronger was one of the greatest passers of his generation.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Pronger was a tremendous passer.
Probably the, yeah, tough to find a better passer out of his own end. What you're saying is exactly why you need to be clean coming out of your own end. Because when you spend 30 seconds in your end battling for pucks and making bad passes, and now finally you get possession and your forwards have it and they want to go, you think that extra layer wants to join into the rush? Like, can Jake Gardner play hard in his own end for 30 seconds and then join the rush and get into the offense? Doesn't happen. Last night, two goals off a faceoff because Jake Gardner is smart and knows how to get pucks through on net. The other one is a 5-on-3 from Zaitsev, who knows you can't stand still and shoot pucks. Did you notice right. the first 5-on-3?
Yeah.
They're standing around taking snapshots from the top. It right. doesn't work. So he takes a couple strides, he gives himself some space, and then at that point you can shoot harder, and it's also more difficult for the defenders to try to figure out what you're doing.
One of my favorite stories from the O2 Olympics in Salt Lake City, talking to Paul Kariya just after the games, he said it was incredible in practice and in games. You would look down for a second, and the puck would be on your stick. That's how good that defense was. I go back to Anaheim, he said, my first game back, I got hit in the ribs with a pass from 15 feet.
Who passed it?
I can't remember who it was. The Russian defensive defenseman they had? Didn't score for like 200 games.
Soleil?
No. And but Paul just said, like, it's just when you play at that elite level on Olympic teams and things like that, those guys just hit you with passes, and it's instinctive for them. Like, it's never not on your tape.
Oh, yeah, for them. And then you come back to the right. NHL, and it's like, oh, my God. It's like when you're drafted, you go to your first NHL camp, and it's such a better level than major junior, and you come back, and it's like, I have to play with these guys.
Vitaly Vishnevsky.
Vishnevsky, oh, yes, left-handed, big guy.
Yeah. The puck
big,
was not
huge, just a huge nose, like bigger than Malkin.
Yeah.
Like gigantic nose.
Yeah. So
that's a great trait.
Yeah, the question was, you know, $1,000 or his nose full of nickels, which would you rather have?
Him and Marchand smoke cigars together in the shower.
Oh.
That's a bad trick.
You get
that's
that
a
joke?
Bad trick.
That's a good trick.
Because the cigar stays dry. Yes, we
can. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Paul Kariya, by the way, is like my go-to answer to every trivia question. Just ask Ian Mendez in Ottawa whenever we would have, because he has his like famous first intermission trivia games that he loves to play in media. We all look forward to it. Doesn't matter what the question is. It could be about coaches. It could be about goalies. My go-to, Paul Kariya.
You know what?
Hey, can I point this out real quick? Just because it's absolutely disgusting and no one should ever do it. Someone defecated in a toilet.
What?
Took a picture of it and tweeted it to me and our radio station. Look at Tyler. He's laughing because
Why would somebody do that?
Like, if you are that mentally ill, please delete any kind of social media, because odds are you're doing things to other people, and it's far worse than what I'm looking at right now.
That is disgusting.
That's why you block your mentions. That's why you block your mentions, so you don't see things like that. I want to go back to Paul Kariya for a second. After that.
You got a minute, yeah.
One of the great sadnesses in my hockey life is that Paul Kariya is no longer in the game. And the reason he's no longer in the game is that people wouldn't listen when he talked about head injuries and dangerous play. And Paul was talking about it 20 years ago, before it was fashionable and before you could talk about head injuries.
Had the special helmet made for him.
And sadly, the only time he's been back to Anaheim since he retired was for Teemu Selanne's retirement night. But the game needs people like Paul Kariya. Paul Kariya was a lone voice a long time ago who was ignored. And it's very sad to me that he doesn't have a voice in the game today, because it needs to be heard.
Good old Paul Kariya, my trivia answer to everything. All right, day off for the Leafs. No surprise with the way the schedule is. And then they're back in action against the St. Louis Blues tomorrow on Thursday. You can listen to it on TSN 1050. That's it for us. The Scott MacArthur Show is coming up next.